Good evening. James McCanny here with my Science Hour, May 3rd, 2012. And I just wanted to mention, sorry about last week at the beginning of the show. I said it was 2011, so I hope I didn't throw anybody off. But we definitely are in 2012. Every now and then, I do a little computer searching, just like everybody else out there. And this week, just for curiosity, I checked the search. I did some searches for under comets, and I came up with a just pathetically little amount of information from years ago on comets, and just ridiculously false information still being propagated by government sources. And in a sense, these are offshoots of government sources. For example, one is the Planetary Institute, and a little blip for kids to make their own little dirty snowball comet out of dry ice. You know, they said for ages 8 to 13 for some kind of a science project. But, in from 2009, I think, something like that. And just an absolute dearth of information, absolutely nothing out there of value. So I did other searching around for other science topics, and what I'm seeing is that you would think science is dead out there. Coming from the standard science industry, nothing has been updated in many cases from, 2003 or even before. it's pretty pathetic. No wonder the public is lacking in science. The science leaders in this country are just sitting on their laurels big time, and there's nothing interesting out there. And I'm sure that's why a lot of people listen to this show, is because I have my own view, of course, and I look at main issues. Like last week I talked about private companies going into outer space. I'm going to talk a little bit more about that this week. But there's really, really a lack of interesting material coming out of standard science. So the other thing I notice, I think it's comical that the government is still paying people to try and turn listeners away from me. It's a pretty pathetic attempt. But there again, it's just, old hat material that doesn't have any value. It's just... it's just comical. But I guess the main point is science is really lacking, and the public is getting the short end of the deal here. You're paying for something and not getting it. The people that are benefiting from this are private corporations, like I talked about last week. I'm going to talk a little bit about the sun here. The sun lately has been very quiet. It's a little too quiet for my liking, as they say in the old westerns. But definitely very quiet. We had some magnetic reversals this week, and that is where the solar wind magnetic field, the magnetic field that is carried in the solar wind that comes from the sun out towards Earth, and if that locked in magnetic field is in the negative direction, in the downwards, in the south direction, then it opposes Earth's own geomagnetic field that builds up a protective sheath about 35,000 miles out from Earth. And when those two combine, they cancel each other. This allows the solar wind to come pounding into our upper atmosphere. The effect of that is secondary X-rays, so we get a little dose of X-rays. And I know one listener one time was kidding around when I was talking about this. He said he has fashioned out of lead, thin lead, a cap, like the Chinese cap, a little kind of conical cap, and then some shoulder pads out of lead. And he can walk outside and he feels safe walking around protected from X-rays. But I'm not sure if everybody has to do that. But x-rays are dangerous. That's a statistical thing. So let me talk a little bit about statistical conditions and radiation. Basically, the majority of radiation that affects us is coming in the form of x-rays. The x-rays, if they hit a cell, they can damage that cell, and then that cell can mutate, the DNA in that cell can change, and so it's just a statistical thing. Did the x-ray going through your body cause any change, or did it not? Did it burn that cell? And that's where, for example, cancer can start. What is cancer? Very simply, when I was in graduate school in physics, I had a professor for biophysics, and he said in class, he said, we know what causes cancer. He says it's the inability of cells to communicate with one another. And what causes that? It could be a solvent, say a worker or say a woman in the home is using chemicals and that has harsh solvents in there, and that helps you clean. But that's getting, you're breathing it in, you're breathing in the vapors, maybe you're touching it with your hands, and those chemicals are going into your body. And so what happens? Okay, they can surround a cell and block communication between that cell and the next cell. They can also cause damage in the chemistry inside that cell in the DNA. But when the cells cannot communicate one with the next cell, they start to produce cells next to them. That's actual normal functioning of the human body. And so, it's, for example, a good example is if you get a cut on your hand or somewhere on your arm, whatever, you get a cut. And the cells, I'm not communicating with that cell over there. They're separated. So what happens? They start creating cells to bridge that gap. And so that's the normal function of cells in the human body or in any living organism. Plants do it, animals do it. But what happens when some foreign element gets in there and all of a sudden the cell is confused, it's been hit by an x-ray, and it can't communicate, it can't transmit those electrical signals with the next cell, the cell next to it, they start producing more cells, and that's what a tumor is. A tumor is nothing more than the overproduction of cells. And there are many reasons for this happening. So my professor, biophysics, it's at Tulane University, said, yeah, we know what the root cause of cancer is, but they don't know how to cure it. Once this process starts, how do you cure it? So the typical thing is you cut out that material, try and get rid of what the problem is, and then hopefully those cells will grow back together in a normal fashion. But a lot of times also there are other factors. If a person's immune system is weak, then cancer can grow. A lot of people with cancer have a pH level that is very acidy. Also, this allows fungus to grow in the body, literally fungus. And a lot of people with cancer have problems with fungus also. But at any rate, I'm going to actually jump down to another topic I have in my list. As long as I branched out, I'm talking about cancer. Today in the medical field, there is a lack of alternative treatments for cancer. All they can do now is repeat chemo, chemo, chemo. It's the bloodletting of the 1900s being carried over into this century. This has been going on for probably 60 years. I had uncle in the 1950s and an aunt who died from chemo. They didn't die from cancer. The chemo killed them. So the medical industry is still doing this. And after all of this cancer research, 60 years of the cancer research, they're still using chemo. What is chemo? It kills everything in your body, it destroys your immune system, and then hopefully the idea is that it kills the cancer cells first, and then your body rebuilds itself. What a primitive medical treatment technique. And so there's just a lack of alternative treatments in the medical, what I call, industry. Unfortunately, a majority of cancer, of course, occurs in older people, and a lot of them are on Medicare. So what happens? You go to Medicare, you go to the doctor. Medicare only pays for certain treatments. And so the people are locked into this archaic, just broken system, and that's the only thing that the doctors can say is chemo. So we have a real problem in this country. The medical industry is like NASA. They're stuck in a rut and they can't get out. They've fallen down and they can't get up. They need a smart clapper for the medical industry. From what I understand, more and more people are refusing to take chemo. It's just an unfortunate situation that there is no alternative treatment in the United States. I know people go elsewhere for treatment, but not everybody can get on a plane and fly up to some other country to get medical treatment and then pay for it out of their pocket because Medicare won't cover that. So people are stuck in this country in a medical system that's broken, that doesn't have alternatives, doesn't allow people to choose an alternative and have alternative treatment. And so what happens? They have two choices, to get chemo or get nothing. I don't see that as a choice. But at any rate, if anybody has any interesting or informative information about alternative cancer treatments or anything that Medicare will support, please just email me and just email the address that you have and for myself or the web page, and let me know if there's some people I know that need alternative treatment and they're not finding it. That's the problem. So anyway, a little public announcement, and this is something, if I find something, I will announce it on this show. But the only thing you can say right now is the medical industry, along with insurance, along with Medicare, Medicaid, whatever you call it, is stuck in a rut and they can't get out and there's no alternative. Okay, so at any rate, this all started because I was talking about x-rays, secondary x-rays from solar radiation and the cause of cancer. The other thing I talked about a few weeks ago is the fact that during the 1950s, 60s, etc., I don't know if it went into the 70s, but the vaccines that were given for polio also contained many other viruses, some of them activated by radiation. There's a book out, and I encourage people to look into this. It's called Dr. Mary's Monkey, and the implications of this book are very far-reaching. If you look at all of the things that were going on back then, this book is something that everybody should just take a look at. You can go online and get some information. But in this process of research, the author indicated that in the Salk vaccines, a lot of viruses were given to kids, and as we see radiation coming in from Fukushima, etc., other sources of radiation in the airports where you're going through the scanners, a whole body x-ray, and they apparently have the x-rays turned up really high, so they're really blasting people. There's no measurement of x-rays on those. There's no, I mean, can you imagine sending somebody every time they go on an airplane into an x-ray machine and blasting their whole body with x-rays? How absolutely insane this society has become. And why are scientists sitting back there and not saying anything? Well, The reason they're not is because 99.9% of them are on government payrolls or in somehow related to government money, and so they don't say anything. But the sources of X-ray radiation on people today is increasing. So the viruses activated by radiation would be on the increase, and one of the effects is the high increase in the rate of cancer. So anyway, I talked about that a couple of weeks ago. Make sure you go back and listen to past shows. I know there's a lot of new people listening to this show. I'll just reference the webpage, jmccsci.com. Go there, go to the radio show that's called the Weekly Radio Show Archive subpage. Click on that and you'll go to the page with the radio show's archive for the last 10 years. The people I talk to every now and then, they once they discover this page, over 4.5 gigabytes of information on it, once they discover it, they start listening to the programs. One person was listening to one per night, going back and listening to old shows, catching up on how the world really works. And once people see this, their eyes are opened. And I guess I have to thank the government disinformation people who use my name, and they try and bash me, of course. But what they do also is they send a lot of traffic to my page. And once those people get there, they go, well, what's all of this hoopla about this McCanny guy? Who's he? What's going on? So they go to my page. And they start discovering what is really there, the real information. And so a lot of people go to my page thanks to the government disinformation people. So I have to thank them for, as Henry Ford once said, I believe he said, that you can say, I said something like this, if you say something about Ford, you can say anything you want. Say good or bad, just say Ford. The idea was that any advertisement is good advertisement. I had a friend one time, grew up in Hollywood, and he said that the people loved bad publicity there. Bad publicity was the best publicity. If it was something happened to an actor or something like that and was in the news, it was just free advertisement. It was it got their name out there, and that's what they wanted. They wanted attention. They wanted people to come and listen. And so I guess that's one way of looking at this is that, first of all, they do a really sorry job of trying to attack me, but unwittingly sending a lot of people to my webpage to find out what's going on. Once people are there, they start to open up their eyes. Once their eyes are opened up and they start to see how the real world really works, the real world, not the pretend world that's in the news and that the government tries to pawn off on you, then they start listening to the show. So once again, make sure you go and listen to the archives on the webpage. And for the people that want the Bic pen 5-minute solution, throw it away and don't go back again, don't go to my webpage. This webpage is not for you. This webpage takes serious time, study, and understanding, and you have to go in and, like I say, on the webpage with a great big pot of coffee or a gallon or two of your favorite drink and sit there and read this web page, go through it, understand it. The books, the DVDs, etc., I was telling someone the other day, these are written for all time. In 100 years, my books will be as valid as they are right now. It's interesting to see that the Planet X Comets and Earth Changes book, my first book in the series that's available now to the public, I have other previous books that are not available in print, but the current set of books, Planet X Comets and Earth Changes, is the first book in the series, is selling as good today as when it first came out over a decade ago. So how many books can say that? The corn seed program is continuing. I will continue the sale of corn seed up until around mid-May. And after that, it'll get to be just a little bit too late for the planting season. But remember that the planting season for the northern states for corn is not quite here yet. It's a little early to plant corn. I know some farmers get out there and plant it early, hoping for warm weather. But corn is a warm weather crop. The corn that I have, the corn seed, is for 100 days. So if you planted it on, say, Memorial Day, the end of May, then you would have June, July, August, plus 10 days in September in those last 10 days. But you probably want to get it in around the 20th of May to the 30th of May. That's a good time to plant corn. So you're still plenty of time to get the corn or distribute it to other people. And I had some good feedback from some people talking about this. I'm selling the Dent corn, non-GMO, non-genetically modified, organic, no sprays, no chemicals. It's you could eat it, but this is very a rare seed, so you wouldn't want to eat the seed that you buy. But you can grow it, and here's the point. Here's a great point that somebody brought up this past week, that with the price of survival food today, people are going out and buying survival food. It's expensive. I sold for a while. I don't sell it anymore just because of technical complications. The survival food is very expensive. Also, someday it's going to run out. I don't know how big your storage area is, but someday that storage food is going to run out. And if we ever have a major, say, power shutdown, grid destruction from a solar flare or something in this country, or other, who knows, man-made event, natural event, eventually your bought, purchased emergency food is going to run out. What are you going to do? Well, the corn seed solves that problem. It's the third most important grain in the world after rice and wheat. Now, most people cannot grow rice where they are. It's a very specific set of agricultural conditions. Most people could grow wheat, but the majority of people can grow corn. Corn is grown all over the world, and it's a survival food. You can grind it up and boil it. I've been eating it for breakfast lately, and I like it. George Washington ate corn for breakfast. What you do is you just grind it up to very coarse grinding, not fine at all, just like so every kernel is in four or five little chunks, little pieces. That's how coarse ground it is. You boil it in water, and you would be amazed at what a cup of corn, how far that goes. You can put it in soups. You can put it in when you cook, say, potatoes, if you cook any other dish. Say you have a roast or something, you can have corn along with that. It goes with just about everything. And so you can use it in recipes. You can make bread with it. You can fine grind it and make it into cornbread. Corn is one of the most versatile grains for cooking. And so, at any rate, and it's your, it would be your own survival food. It's something you would grow year after year after year. You would be able to produce your own survival food. So in that sense, it's extremely important. Plus, you're helping destroy Monsanto, Cargill, and the other seed companies that are trying to destroy your ability to get seeds. And that's very, very, very important to understand that when you go to, I want to reiterate, if you go to the seed store or if you go to the grocery store or say you go to the home and garden store and you look there on the seed rack, they have a nice big rack of seeds and it has a big sign at the top and it says organic. And you think, oh, organic, that's great. And the reality is that it's probably hybrid corn. It'll only grow one season. And let me clarify that. Somebody tried to to ridicule me and say that hybrid corn won't regrow the next year. Yeah, you can take the seeds from a hybrid corn and put it in the ground, and something will grow. It won't be what you want. It'll be some distorted, deranged form of corn. In the second year, it'll be even more just deranged something, if it grows the second year at all. You'll have a low production output from that corn seed. So does hybrid corn, can you plant it? Yeah, you can plant it. will something grow? Yeah, something will grow, but it won't be what you want. So in that aspect, I'm correct. Hybrid seed is not will not grow. You plant something because you want something to grow that you are expecting to grow, not some Frankenstein monster piece of corn that is of no use and it has deranged DNA value. No, that's not what I call regrowing or regenerating. No, not at all. What I'm selling is a true dent corn seed. The minimum amount I sell is 250 seeds. 225, I believe, but you get a lot more than that, by the way, when you order. And let me just do something here. I've been doing this all along where the corn is shipped from. If people order one or especially two of the big packages of 5,000 seed, we double your order. And we've been doing that all along because I figure with those people have a place to put this. And they have a good place to grow it. That's why they're ordering this. So I double those orders. And I send them 20,000 seeds. So anybody that orders the 5,000, or especially if you order two of the 5,000 seed packages, then we double that order. And you really are going to get 20,000 seeds. It's quite a bit. That's enough to plant, about two-thirds of an acre. And just remember, corn is a very versatile, it's a survival food. You can regrow it. Here's a story that came back from a guy who has chickens. He got the corn seed a couple years ago, has been growing it, regenerating it. Now he's got his own seed stock. He's been giving that seed to other friends to grow. And he feeds it to chickens. Not only does he eat it himself, but uses it around his farm. And he feeds to chickens. And he says, those eggs are the best eggs you ever had in your life. He said, the yolks are golden yellow. He says, they're just beautiful eggs that the chickens are producing. And by the way, that was why this particular strain of dent corn seed was being developed when it was destroyed in the spring flooding of 2008. Okay, I'm not going to go on any more about that, but go to the webpage, jmccsci.com, and order some of the corn seed and propagate it for posterity. That's the point. Make this corn a part of the world again. It's been destroyed by Monsanto and Cargill and the other seed companies. They don't want this in the hands of the public, and I'm making sure it does get into the hands of the public. So do your part. Get some corn seed. If you don't grow it, give it to somebody who does. Send it to somebody who will grow it. And I talked about the multiplication of the seeds. You take one corn seed, that multiplies by 100 the first year. Let's say you get 100 corn seeds from the one corn seed. And, of course, you're planting hundreds or thousands of corn seeds. But one corn seed after 1 year is a 100 seed multiplication. The second year, that's 10,000. The next year, that's 1,000,000. In 3 years, you have 1,000,000 corn seeds for every one that you plant. So that's some pretty amazing multiplication. I'd also encourage people in this vein of raising your own survival food, buy some good, for example, wheat. You can sprout it. That's another thing with the corn. You can sprout it Wheat sprouts are very good, and then plant it, raise your own wheat, save your own seeds, and remember that you should isolate these. That's another thing. You should have an area, or you can bag pollinate these crops too, the corn, etc., but learn about pollination and make sure your corn is not cross-pollinating with anything else, any other corn in the area. There's many ways to do this. And by the way, the corn seed that I'm selling has complete instructions with it. All the information you need to grow it, to plant it, to harvest it, to save the seeds, etc. The next topic is very disturbing. This past week on CNN, there was an article about how to change your face when you're in public to prevent cameras from identifying your face. Now, with public security cameras going up everywhere, and in airports and in public, any public place today has security cameras, many of these linked into networks. And also, let's talk about Facebook and other online services, you might call them, in which people's pictures show up, or web pages. Now, here's what happens. There is face recognition software which takes your face. This started with cameras, able to recognize a face and adjust the camera lens to the face. Or there might be 10 people in a picture. Your little handheld camera can recognize all of those faces and make sure everybody's smiling when the camera takes the picture. Okay, so there's, but on the internet, the services like Facebook can go into the photos, take the people in those photos, recognize their face, put it with a name, and then catalog. For example, the CNN article talked about changing your face if you go to a party. How to put things on your face so you're not recognizable by the camera. Say somebody takes your picture with a group. Oh, you're having a good time, and they take a picture of your group, and there you are, and it goes on Facebook. Well, what happens? That picture is immediately processed up through the CIA computer databases, cataloged, and all the people in that picture are associated as friends. So let's say down the road someplace, somebody that's in that group is designated as a terrorist. Okay, now they can go back, they can thread through all of the pictures that have occurred with that person and see who their friends are. And gee, there you are, you know, five people away in a picture, and you're now associated with terrorism. This is the kind of insanity that is going on today. But I'm just telling you that no matter where you go, or if you drive in your car, license plate recognition, to catalog everybody that is on the road. It's just, you know, the amount of Big Brother going on and searching into your lives going on today is just unbelievable. And it's only going to get worse. So, at any rate, I just wanted to mention that. Beware of photos if you're in a public place. Somebody all of a sudden takes your picture. Say, erase that picture. I'm sorry. Or that picture do not allow on Facebook or whatever. It's just it's a chronic disease, but people, a lot of people are just, I'd say they're complete idiots today and have no knowledge of these kind of things. A lot of people, I would say the United States, in terms of idiots, I'd put it at about 90%, the people that are clueless out there that have absolutely no clue about what is going on. They simply function in this society, and you know, they have no clue that all of this is going on. So they take a picture of you, put it on their Facebook site, and all of a sudden, you know, the face recognition software is at work, and you're being cataloged. So anyway, that's something that is here. It's not something futuristic. Last week, I talked about a company called Planetary Resources, And if I'm not going to repeat a lot of what I said last week, but basically there's two fundamental issues here. Here's a company, a private company, being started with by people with money, investors going in. The company was actually started by a NASA scientist, and he was the head of the Mars, one of the Mars research programs within NASA. Well, gee, he has access to information, knows right where to go to get the good information, what asteroids to mine, what resources have been discovered on what asteroids, etc. And here's a company with the Google, the founders of Google. These guys have big bucks because they sold your privacy down the river. And for example, that's a great example. The production of Google has developed the computer databases and the search programs and everything that is needed to catalog all kinds of information about individuals and make it readily available. For example, when you do a Google search, what happens? All computers go into activity and instantaneously all kinds of information comes back to you. Thousands and thousands of references. That it goes out and looks for every page where those references are, etc. So that technology is also used to destroy your privacy, to dig into your private life, to know everything about you, to have it all cataloged and on a computer. Where do you go on the internet? What pages are you visiting? What's your opinion? Are you dangerous to the government these days? Are you being cataloged? Should you be cataloged on one of the color lists, on a red or an orange list on the government? The purpose of those, just like pre-World War II Nazi Germany, there were the color lists where the people were on lists, and if something happened, they would go out and round those people up and put them in prison, because they didn't want the intelligent people out there talking to the public. In Germany, they had the same situation. They were feeding them fluoride to keep their brains numb. That's where fluoride came from. Pre-World War II Germany. It was discovered that people became lethargic. They couldn't think straight. Their thought patterns were very limited. So that's why they're feeding fluoride to the public. At any rate, back to the topic of this company going out and mining with the intention of mining resources in outer space. The point is, number one, they are using NASA public trust information as a private venture. And so, and the other question is, who owns outer space? Who told these jokers that they have a right to go out and take resources? If they want to go out and take pretty pictures and fly by and say, oh, there's a nice asteroid, look at that asteroid, that's one thing. But if they want to go out and start mining resources, who gave them the right to go do that? They're just assuming that they can do it. Oh, this guy's from NASA. No, they don't own that. You own that, and you own the information that is in NASA. This is a public trust. It doesn't belong to this joker from NASA who starts a company, okay? That's the issue. But the point I want to make this week is, what is the first thing they are going for? What's the very first thing on their list? They want to go out to the asteroids with water. Isn't that interesting? Given the control of water on this planet, and I talked about that a couple weeks ago, how Monsanto, other companies, Nestle's, our nice chocolatey company, out there trying to buy up water rights. Warren Buffett, water magnate, he says if people will buy it, he will get in the middle to make money on it. So, by the way, I want to, speaking of Warren Buffett, a guy that I really don't especially care for too much, because he profits on the on industries. But at any rate, he put out an email, and I got this, and I'm sure the people are forwarding this all over the place. It says he knows how to cure the balance the budget. He said, okay, if the budget is not balanced, then none of the congressmen can run for re-election. and that would cure it overnight. Well, gee, Warren, you don't understand congressmen and how distorted and corrupt a society we live in. If you pass that law, as they wanted it as a constitutional amendment, then you know what the congressmen are going to do? They're going to go more behind, under the table, behind the scene, revolving door. And by the one of the other things is they couldn't get a pension. Well, you know, those congressmen are so well set with goodies and benefits from companies that they have padded their pockets with, they don't worry about the stupid Senate pension that they get. They don't worry about their salary. You know what? Some amount of money that's pretty minimal. They don't worry about that. They have millions and millions coming in from backdoor deals that they're doing. So don't worry about the congressman worrying about their salary. 99% of them are taking it on the side and getting money under the table and millions of dollars. So don't think you're going to affect those congressmen by taking away their salary or their pension. That's just going to make them mad, and they're going to do more and more backyard deals, backdoor deals, and under the table. So, Warren, you don't know how the world spins. It's really stupid. And before you start sending your emails and asking people to forward the email all over the place with a stupid idea like that, start to think. Start to understand how the world really spins. And just remember, those congressmen, Warren, are as greedy as you are. And they're as conniving and resourceful as you are to make money. So don't think that your stupid amendment to the Constitution is going to affect congressmen, because it isn't. Okay, well, enough on Warren Buffett, who owns water rights and other things that I don't think people should own at all. Somebody with that guy's money should be doing more to benefit humanity, not himself. Just quickly, the product of the week I want to promote is the pre-filter. It's something that's very important. I'm not going to spend a lot of time. It's the only place you can get this product on the planet, the Universal ChemRad Oil Pre-Filter. It sits on top of your current water filter. It adapts to any of the standard stainless steel or plastic water filters out there on the market today. And it pre-filters your water. If you're in a sludge situation or a pollution situation or radiation, you don't want that dirty water going into your nice clean water filter. So the purpose of this, the Universal ChemRad Oil Pre-Filter, is to get that out of your water before you put the water into your water filter. It sits right on top of your current water filter. Like I say, it fits any brand, stainless steel or plastic. And go to the webpage, jmccsci.com, and get the details. Okay, on to the main science topic. I have kind of a strange question this week I'm going to try and answer. How is survival living here on planet Earth, how is that similar to living in outer space? Now, most people today don't ever consider that they would ever be living in outer space. Why? Because our program, a space program, is not designed to do that. The space program is designed to send some guy to Mars in the year 2050 or beyond, or some absolute absurd, far in the distant future date that nobody would ever comply with. So at any rate, the point is that most people don't think about actually them personally being in outer space. But if you, say, were on a space station that had a million people on it, and you were out in outer space, and this, say that we had enough wherewithal to put this together, and after 50 years of a space program, we definitely should have this kind of facility underway, in the works, up there, people, hundreds of thousands of people already living in outer space, instead of the completely ridiculous absconding with funds and technology that's going on has gone on with NASA. But at any rate, say that you had the ability to go into space on a space station and live, and say that we were preparing for this because there was an imminent planetary destruction from outer space. How would that living be the same as survival living on Earth? Well, we've all seen what the, say, the cave ages, people living in cave, eking out a living, some of them starting agriculture, some of them hunters, gatherers, but how would that be similar to living in outer space? Well, there's probably not a lot of hunting and gathering going on in outer space, but for survival, what happens? You need a very essential set of commodities that are ongoing. These have to be reproduced on an ongoing basis. If you were in a large space station, or say you were on a farm out in the mountains of Colorado and there was an earthwide, let's say, and a big electromagnetic pulse from the sun that destroyed the Earth's grid systems. Okay, the grid is down, electric is gone, it's going to be decades before the electric is back. What are you going to do? What are you going to do? Most people would have enough gasoline in their car to get to the next, 10 miles or 20 miles on average. Very few people would have a full tank, and remember that the gasoline pumps would not work either. So you don't have any way of getting gas. How do you get gas? You just wouldn't. So pretty much everybody would be where they are. Transportation, air transportation, everything would come to a standstill. Bus transportation, public transportation. So everything would come to a standstill. You are going to be where you are. Or at most, probably they're going to shut down the highways and the police are going to have everything blocked off so you can't get anywhere anyway. So you're going to be where you are. So that's kind of like living on a space station. There's no place to go. You have to have everything there. You have to have everything in order. What do you need? You need clean water. You need hygiene. You need food. And you need to grow food and recycle water so it's clean on an ongoing basis. In outer space, a lot of those issues with water have already been solved. Recycling water, in a space station environment, you would have probably entire zones of the space station. And I talk about this in my book, by the way, in the book The Diamond Principle. I talk about the space stations that I personally designed, long tubes made from hydrocarbon material that are gathered from outer space. This I talk about in The Diamond Principle, my latest book. Those, you would have entire cylinders that are made up for agriculture. You would have entire cylinders made up for where people would live. You would have entire cylinders made up for storing and the storing of materials or food, etc. Okay, so at any rate, the essential here, one of the essential things that is the same, is that okay, after a while you would have to grow or propagate more food. More food. How would you do that in outer space? Now, I've seen some models for outer space production of food. One thing is you have a lot of sunlight coming, a lot of harsh sunlight. In Earth, we have ultraviolet filters in the upper atmosphere, ultraviolet X-rays. Much of the harsh radiation that comes from the sun is filtered in the upper atmosphere. Also, a lot of the infrared is filtered in the atmosphere. The majority of light that comes down to the lower atmosphere is in the form of visible light. So you would need some kind of plants or filtration of light coming into the growing stations in outer space so that you would have just the light that's needed to grow the plants. You would need like a hydroponics type of agriculture, and then the complete cycle system where everything that is, say, the air that is breathed out by the humans, the water, the recycling, everything would have to be recycled. Another thing is you have to keep things relatively bacteria-free. Now, there are good bacteria and there are bad bacteria. So hygiene is very important. And so this brought me to a stage this past week. I was looking for a type of toothpaste. There's another dilemma. I talked about the medical dilemma in this country. We also have a dental dilemma in the United States. If you go to India, and if you go to some other countries in the world, you find that the people have very good teeth, even though they're very, it's a third world country. They have very poor conditions there, but they have good teeth. How does that happen? If you don't have good teeth, you're not going to have good health. That's just the way it is. Well, they use a stick, and they some of them are soaked in peppermint. There are other natural elements, or in this case, oil, essential oil, that would come from the peppermint plant. And you can use that to clean your teeth. It not only gives you a good smell or scent, but it also has a lot of cleansing properties. Lemon is another one. And baking powder. Now, that's something that a lot of people have lost in the use of baking powder for brushing your teeth. And so recently, in trying to find something natural that works, I also discovered something that plaque, the buildup of plaque, is basically there's a lot of acidic properties in your mouth. And when you clean it, you have to get rid of those acidic properties. So, of course, there's Arm & Hammer baking soda toothpaste that's available on the market. So I'm not the first person to create this concept. I'm just trying to let people know that there is a natural solution. And so what I've been trying personally is baking soda with a drop or two of peppermint. I'm finding that the plaque buildup is a lot less. My teeth are very clean, and it gets rid of that acidity, all of that acid buildup in your mouth. So it's a very fresh feeling. Okay, so what does this have to do with space stations or survival living? This is all going to be a requirement. You're not going to be able to go to the pharmacy or the mall and buy toothpaste. How are you going to keep your mouth clean? How are you going to keep your teeth clean, flossed, etc., and keep them clean so that they're healthy? This is one of the issues that I've been looking into on a large scale. What type of very simple techniques are there for keeping clean? For hygiene. There's a list that I came across, and actually it was dealing with boating, oddly enough, because around a boat you're in the water, and this is for liveaboard type of boats. It was a list of various types of substitute products, and it gave, for example, hull cleaners, the type of liquid you put in a septic system. All of these type of liquids or cleansers you would have on a liveaboard boat. And that's another excellent example of people who have to live with the environment and live with a very limited amount of supplies. So anyway, for every chemical or cleaner or liquid or polish or whatever that you could use on a boat, there is a natural alternative. Those natural alternatives typically depend on a plant that grows like peppermint or oils or lemon or other types of plants, or natural powders like the baking soda that you would use in combination for cleaning, for hygiene, etc. So what I'm trying to promote here is people look into this. A lot of this information is on the internet. One of the other topics I discuss in the Diamond Principle is the fact that in outer space, using the comet process, that is the process of discharging the solar capacitor, you can gather in materials, especially the very important ones, water, hydrocarbons, all very plentiful in the inner solar system, and sulfur, all the way up to sulfur, carbon, another essential element for human beings. All of these can be gathered using the comet process, where you're in the solar capacitor. By discharging that solar capacitor, you can gather materials. And I show the process for how that works in the Diamond Principle. But the point is, all of these essential elements for life can be easily gathered in the solar system. And so that is something, too, that if you're in a survival mode, where are you going to get water, fuel, for cooking, for growing your plants and saving your seeds, growing the right kind of plants for hygiene. The end result is that living in a survival mode on planet Earth is very similar to living in outer space in a space station. So all of the same factors apply. You're in a confined community. The Navy is just the same. Life on a big ship. Everybody has to follow certain rules. If not, it's bad for everybody. So, but one of the main things, the one thing they don't do on ships or in the current space program is grow their own food. So I'm talking about long-term survival. That's why I mentioned this week, too, that corn is a survival food. It regenerates, and you can have your own supply of survival food into the future indefinitely. That's one other reason why it's absolutely fundamentally important for everybody to at least get some corn seed and store it, or propagate it and then keep it going, propagate it for next year and the year after and the year after. I'm out of time. Remember to visit the webpage, jmccsci.com. This is James McCanney. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.